From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Soap opera icon Tina Sloan from Guiding Light will be coming on later to explain what really happened that one time Dr. Baker was kidnapped by aliens. But first, this week, the Presidential Deficit Commission released their recommendations on reducing government spending, and among the cuts they suggest, ending grants to public broadcasting. Now, we here at Wait, Wait, we'll do fine without it. We make all our money by auctioning off my sweaty T-shirts after every performance. But, you know, some stations do need the money, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to have Carl tell them not to do it.
Go ahead and try it. I dare you.
That should do it. In the meantime, it's your turn to play our games. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Micheline. I'm in Detroit.
Hey, Micheline, how are you?
I'm doing so well.
You certainly are, from the sound of it.
Oh, I am so excited to be on the show.
Can I venture a guess? You're the happiest person in Detroit.
You're right. It doesn't take much, though.
I know, but still, Detroit needs more people like you.
Yeah.
Micheline, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian and a winner of Last Comic Standing, Mr. Alonzo Bowden.
Hey, Alonzo.
Hello, Micheline.
Next, a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor, right there.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Micheline.
Finally, as a humorist and author of the new audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 years of comments and comic pieces, available to download near you, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hi, Micheline.
Micheline, you are going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, as he often does, will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Your first quote is someone greeting a distinguished visitor to India this week.
Welcome. As a fellow Kenyan, I'm very proud to see that you have made it.
What person who actually is not a Kenyan, really, despite what you've heard, got a hero's welcome in India and across Asia this week?
That would be President Obama.
Yes, indeed. Some countries are always going to criticize and mock the American president, no matter what he does. That's why he left one of them and went to Asia this week. Sure enough, President Obama was received by jubilant crowds in his first stop, India. Indians love him, not least because, unlike his predecessor, he does not insist on calling them Native Americans. They didn't like that. The trip was originally supposed to be a diplomatic initiative, but after the midterm disaster, the White House rebranded it as a jobs creation trip. Even that, this is true, but even that wasn't polling well. So now it's actually being called by the White House a surprise invasion of East Asia. The president's numbers shot up. President Obama was there to increase exports to Asia. For example, in India, he showed them all a special Hindu version of the Snuggie. It has six armholes.
Oh.
There you are. Very sensitive to their cultural needs. He also visited a customer support call center. You know, they've got a lot of those there that do like customer support. He said, this country is a mess. How do I fix it? They suggested unplugging America, wait 10 seconds, then plug it back in. Your next quote is, Micheline, is somebody who went out on a press tour to sell his book and rehabilitate his image.
I'm not a hater. I didn't hate Conway West.
So who, despite all the provocations we've given him, is ready to forgive all who misunderestimated him?
That's George W. Bush.
It is George W. Bush. I know some of you young kids out there won't believe this, but that folksy guy on your TV this week, the one with the weird beef with Kanye West, he used to be president. Mr. Bush launched his presidential memoir tour with a carefully choreographed interview in the Today Show. He told Matt Lauer that, quote, the most disgusting moment of his presidency, unquote, the very worst thing that happened during all 8 years, was when Kanye West called him a racist. And everybody felt bad. Even Kanye West came out to apologize, and just as he started to speak, a rack jumped up and said, "I'm going to let you finish. You were bad, but I was the worst disaster of all time."
Well, that's what, you know, the worst moment of his presidency was that somebody said something bad about him. And I remember that he was asked what the best moment of his presidency was during his presidency.
During his presidency.
And he said it was catching this big fish.
Right.
In his pond back home. So his presidency was just like sort of right in the middle of nowhere, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. His entire 8 years of presidency, the highlights and the lowlights, it's like some guy's average week, you know. Well, I caught a fish, and then some guy said something mean about me. And that's it. That was everything else is encompassed between them, I guess. Your last quote is from someone who did not get the all-you-can-eat buffet he'd paid for.
"I refuse to eat the spam. I'm not paying this kind of money to eat spam."
That was Chris Harlan talking about how he tried to keep his dignity as his vacation went wrong. What trip, unfortunately, did he take?
Oh, was that on the cruise ship?
Yeah, the cruise ship, the stranded cruise ship. Very
yeah.
good, yeah. The voyage on the Carnival cruise ship Splendor was like a vision from Dante's Hell. Adrift in an enormous prison cell filled with increasingly angry, frantic, desperate, claustrophobic vacationers making themselves ill from the food. And then on the second day, things went wrong. The engine blew and the crippled cruise ship lost power. And the passengers endured 2 days of cold water and cold food and dark rooms because the cruise line thought it would be better to tow them back than let them off in Mexico. Burn on you, Mexico! Passengers, when they finally got off the boat, they complained of having to line up, eat all this cold food, and having to entertain themselves with acoustic sing-alongs. The good news, though, there were 250 amateur magicians on board to entertain the stranded passengers. Bad news, there were 250 amateur magicians on board.
I don't know if this is Dante's Hell. It sounds like Dante's bad week.
You know? You think so?
Really?
Yes.
In fact, we used to have a word for thousands of people drinking heavily without proper sanitation.
What?
College.
Yes.
And singing folk songs.
That's yeah. true.
I think there's a reason. I mean, when you buy your cruise on Priceline, you take what you get.
That's true. Carl, how did Micheline do in our quiz?
Micheline had a perfect game, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Micheline, you win our prize.
Well done, Micheline.
I didn't meet the Detroit curve.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a blast.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, the G20 summit is this week in Seoul, South Korea, and organizers have announced new measures to keep foreign dignitaries there safe. Chief among them, what?
Can I have a hint?
Well, they're sort of security specialists of a kind. And they're good because they don't require a lot of food. Every now and then you just change their filter.
Guard fish.
Yes, goldfish specifically. Security goldfish. You're familiar with the canary in the coal mine idea?
Mm-hmm.
The convention and exhibition center in Seoul, which is hosting the G20, needed a way to test the purity of the water supply. Well, 8 drowned canaries later, they figured out they should use goldfish. The idea is that the goldfish swim around in the water, and if they don't die, the water is safe, except for the fact it just had a goldfish swimming around there.
I mean, they're not the hardiest thing.
Yeah. No.
How did they get them home? Because mine always died in the plastic bag.
Really?
From the carnival.
Yeah. They were essentially just a trip from the pet store to the toilet.
Just save time, really. Right. Just flush them right down. Tom, an amazing advance in the field of robotics this week. For the first time, a robot has successfully given a person a what?
Where are you guys going with this? A noogie.
Not a noogie.
A hickey. I'm working my way down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A stock tip. I have no idea.
Let's say you don't have a bathtub or a shower handy, but you have a robot.
A sponge bath.
Yes! The world's first robot sponge bath. Meet Cody, a robot programmed not to kill, but to give you a gentle sponge bath. Roboticist Aaron King, who designed Cody, volunteered to be the first recipient of Cody's loving care, a move which proved Cody was harmless, and that roboticist Aaron King was kind of creepy. Health professionals praise the bot. They say patients stripping down for their baths no longer have to be embarrassed, only slightly terrified.
So much could go wrong.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Well, I'm not even at ease when I take my car into one of the robotic car washes.
I'm remembering on the Jetsons, Rosie cleaned the whole house, but I don't think she ever did George.
No.
It's a great point.
With President George W. Bush's memoir, Decision Points, coming out this week, naturally, we reached out to invite the president on for an interview. Now, this was the response we got, for real, from his former press secretary, Dana Perino. Quote, "That's hysterical. You guys are so funny." And then a smiling emoticon. So, instead, we'll be interviewing George W. Bush's audiobook. So, welcome to Wait, Wait. This is a big honor for us. Now, you tell some great stories in the book. Tell us about your first week as president.
I had a few beers with the guys on Monday night. On Tuesday, I'd fixed my favorite after-dinner drink, Benedictine and brandy. I had a couple of bourbon and sevens after I put Barbara and Jenna to bed on Wednesday.
Well, yeah, you earned a celebration, I guess, but then you got down to business, right? Tell us what you did next.
Thursday and Friday were beer drinking nights.
Well, that's remarkable. That's some first week. How did you manage to fit all that in while being president?
You put your teeth on the edge of the mug, tilt your head back, and the beer goes down your throat.
There's a really touching story, Mr. President's audiobook, in your book about your meeting your wife. What went through your mind the first time you saw the future Laura Bush?
Here's the head, and here's the body. It's a girl.
President Bush's audiobook, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But I got to say, you've gone from the nation's highest office to a quiz show on NPR, of all places. So what's going through your head right now?
Bush, what did you do wrong?
Thank you so much. President Bush's audiobook joining us. All right. It's time, of course, to play the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Vicky. I'm from Livingston, Montana.
Hey, how are things in Livingston?
They're great.
What do you like to do there?
I run the animal shelter here.
Really? Do you have, like, stray bison? Because I imagine the animals get large.
No, we have some goats, but no wild game.
Goats aren't wild?
Not mine, no.
Okay. Vicky, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Vicky's topic?
There really shouldn't be an app for that.
Our smartphones are terrific. That's why so many of us choose to crash our cars rather than look up from the screen. But this week, we read a story that made us think things have gotten out of hand. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about new features for our phones that we kind of wish didn't exist. Choose the true story, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes, I am.
First, let's hear from Tom Beaudet.
David Petrie designed dozens of successful apps and made millions doing it, but he has regrets. As he watched smartphone users weaving down the avenues, walking in front of buses like zombies, he could only think, "I got rich while the world got stupid." Determined to find out how much damage he'd caused, Petrie developed How Stupid Can You Get, an app that will calculate your functioning IQ by monitoring all the other apps and functions of your mobile device. Play Tetris during business hours, bad. Play Fruit Ninja, worse. Owning the Sudoku Pro app will raise your IQ several points. That app that makes those farting noises will erase your gains in one fell finger tap. Sexting at any time will land you in the app's lowest category, the Brett Favre. Petrie's hope was that by pointing out what morons we are with our phones, that we'd use them more wisely. So how's it working out? It's a disaster, says Petrie, after 6 weeks of heavy sales and hundreds of thousands of downloads. People are taking how stupid can you get as some sort of challenge, forming online moron clubs and posting record low scores on their Facebook pages. It's my fault. How do I feel about that? I feel like an idiot.
People using a new app to find out how stupid they can be. Your next story of an app we regret comes from Alonzo Bowden.
Worried about what else your internet date lied about? There's an app for that. British health officials are hard at work on a new app that will allow users to pee into their cell phone and find out if you have an STD. You heard right. You pee on the cell phone. Question is, who could aim well enough to pee into a cell phone? Well, according to The Guardian, a British newspaper, the UK Clinical Research Collaboration is creating a smartphone app that will allow users to, quote, put urine or saliva onto a computer chip about the size of a USB chip, plug it into their phone or computer, and receive a diagnosis within minutes. This is aimed at young Brits who are techno-savvy but too embarrassed to visit a doctor or a clinic. Apparently, they're not too embarrassed to have an odd-smelling cell phone. The app will even map out directions to the nearest clinic upon a positive test and provide a Facebook link giving you opportunity to accidentally update your status.
An STD testing app for your smartphone. Your final story of an unfortunate development in smartphones comes from Kiri O'Connor.
At only 99 cents, the Dingaling app for iPhones seemed like a sweet deal. So sweet that 200,000 people scooped it up in the first 2 weeks. The developers, two 21-year-old seniors at Wesleyan University in Connecticut, seemed to be brilliant young heroes. Until Ben Peisch in Washington, D.C., looked at his mom's iPhone and asked her what exactly the Dingaling app does. She told me it allows her to make phone calls, Peisch said, on her phone. Sure enough, when he tested it out, the app merely redirected the phone to its pre-existing phone function. In other words, it did nothing whatsoever at all, except have a cute icon. One expert theorized that smartphones have become so complex that we've lost sight of what they actually are, and that in a weird way, the Dingaling actually served a purpose, reminding users that they have a phone in their phone. The Connecticut Attorney General's office disagrees and is investigating.
Let us review your choices. From Tom Baudet, an app which tells you exactly how stupid you are based on how you use your phone. From Alonzo Bowden, an app that'll help you, along with an accessory and your own involvement, find out if you have an STD. Or from Kiri O'Connor, an app which does nothing but just sends you back to dialing the phone. Which of these is a real app that you can or will be able to find in your local app store?
Well, any of these sound plausible.
Okay.
That's the sad part.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I think I'm going to go for Kiri.
All right. Well, that's your choice. We actually spoke to a reporter who covered the development of this particular app.
The free downloadable app will tell them,
no.
A, if they have a sexually transmitted infection, and B, if so, which one?
That was Dennis Campbell. He's a reporter for The Guardian newspaper. He broke the news of the planned STD testing app. I think, you know, we're left here feeling mixed. We're unhappy you did not choose the correct story. That was obviously Alonzo's. And we're really happy that you're the kind of person who would never, ever consider doing that to your cell phone. So I think it speaks well of you. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we invite on people who did one thing brilliantly and ask them to do something else entirely. The soap opera Guiding Light ended its 72-year run on radio and TV last year. For 26 of those years, our guest Tina Sloan played nurse Lillian Raines. Tina's new book is Changing Shoes. Tina, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Great to have you.
Love being here.
So, Here's the thing about soap operas. They're great. They're involving. But so much stuff goes on. It occurs to me that if any, like a fraction of the things that happens to a character like yours would have happened to somebody in real life, they'd have gone mad years ago.
I hope so.
Tell us some of the things, first of all, that happened to Nurse Lillian Raines.
Okay, do you really want to hear this?
Go down the
list. I'll give you the minute.
Go down the list.
Okay. My daughter drowned in a lake, leaving one red shoe behind. She came back to life. She was blind, aphasic, burned in a fire. She drowned again, leaving another red shoe behind. This time she came back as a totally different character named Lorelei, who looked exactly the same right down to the mole on her chest, but I don't recognize her, her mother. Then I do recognize her. I murdered someone. My daughter murdered someone. My granddaughter at the age of 7 murdered somebody. We have very good genes. I get breast cancer, which is a very nice thing. I mean, nice for, that it was a good storyline, but of course I had to fall in love with my doctor, who was my breast cancer surgeon, but also happened to be my best friend's husband. She found out about the fact that we slept together, called us a suburban cliche, went off a cliff, and killed herself.
All right, season 2, go.
I could keep going.
Wow, that's a lot to keep track of. I mean, did you ever like show up for work and you're like, who am I sleeping with and who do I hate this week? Did you know?
Yeah, I usually did know. I didn't sleep with a whole lot of people, unfortunately.
Oh, well. Yeah. what about your relationship with the audience? Because you went through a lot as Nurse Lillian Raines. I'm sorry, I keep saying it that way, Nurse Lillian Raines. And did people ever come up to you and express their sympathy for your latest tragedy?
Oh, yes. Oh, my Lord, yes. I mean, but before Lillian, I was a really bad person, and people used to smash me with their carts in the A&P or something.
No, you know? Really?
Oh, yeah, they just hated me.
I mean, you played a villain on a different soap opera?
I did, I played a villainess, a bitch goddess.
Oh, really? Which did you enjoy more?
Oh, are you kidding? The bitch got him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People really used to physically attack you because of the mean things you had done in their fictional TV show?
Truly, they did, because I stole a woman away from a man on Somerset. And this woman came up with a shopping cart, and she just rammed. She kept ramming me. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite upsetting.
And since you played a nurse, did anybody ever ask you for... medical advice?
I'll tell you. I was on a plane coming from Phoenix, and there was somebody had a heart attack. And they came over the PA and said, is there a doctor on board? Nothing. Is there a nurse on board? Nothing. I had been a Nobel Prize-winning cardiologist on another show. So I went up to the... I truly did. I truly said to the stewardess, I said, look, this guy's in real trouble. I can say all the right words to him, you know, tell him about his blood pressure and the arrhythmia and calm him down. Till we get him down on the ground. But I said, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I played a Nobel Prize winning cardiologist. I know the words.
And did you do that? Did you
I
actually?
I did it. I swear I did it. I calmed him down. I sat, you know, he was lying down on the ground, and I was talking to him and pretending I was taking his pulse and his blood pressure and, you know, telling him that he was fine and he was doing really well. And I did all the things that I was supposed to do.
It's if you'd gotten really carried away, you would have started sleeping with his best friend, I guess. Or something like that. Okay, now you say you had to fake all that, but in the book you talk about how when ER and those other medical shows went in the air, you had to start, like, getting more realistic in your medicine.
Yes. And I did this operation. They decided we should do an operation like ER, and of course I had the worst sense of anything. I hated the sight of blood, but they put little chicken livers in this person's pretend stomach, and I was.
Wait a minute! What?
Little chicken livers.
So was there an actual person who had to have chicken livers, or was
it
a fake person?
No, but it looked like, you know, you had the gown open, and it looked like we'd cut them open.
Oh, wow!
But I remember instead of a scalpel, I said, "Here's the spatula." And you know, he kept asking for the C-SPAN instead of the C-section. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But and he had killed 39 people, the doctor that I was working with.
What?
39. He was called Dr. Death.
So wait a minute. So how would he kill them? How had he killed them?
Oh, every time you went to an operation for him, you were going to die. I mean, that was the end of your contract. You sort of knew it.
Oh, I mean, really? So when they decided that they wanted to get rid of you, mm-hmm. As an actor in the soap opera, they decided your character got ill and had to go see that doctor?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know, and it would just, you'd be insane, because you didn't know if they were going to let you die or they were going to kill or not. But the minute you said, I'm going to see Dr. Bauer, everybody would just go, uh-oh.
Is there anything you miss about it?
the soap opera?
Oh, I read it. Oh, I miss it every day. I mean, where else? I mean, you'd go sit down for Thanksgiving dinner, and there'd be somebody murdered in front of you, or a ghost would appear at the window. I mean, it was so much fun.
Do you ever try to recreate those in your actual life just to keep yourself interested?
Nobody on the show was divorced in production, in the makeup room, the hair room, or any of the actors. And there were about 100 of us. And I swear to God, it's because we got all the drama out there. I'm waiting to hear when the divorces start now that we're off the air.
Really? Because you think you all got like your need for drama and craziness out fictionally?
I think so. I do, Peter. Think about it. You got to scream and yell and cry almost every day, so you never did it at home. It was all gone. Right. And now there's plenty of energy for it.
Tina Sloan, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
How can it be an opera if it's over in just an hour?
We don't know why soap operas are called operas, because among other things, nobody sings and you all speak in English. So we're going to ask you 3 questions about musical operas. Get 2 right, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. You ready to play?
Sure.
Carl, who was Tina Sloan playing for?
Tina is playing for Andrea Pereca of Abington, Pennsylvania.
Here is your first question. Operas, of course, are sometimes accused of being inaccessible. That may be particularly true of a new opera that just opened in the Netherlands, because the opera is what? A, performed entirely in the dark, B, performed in Klingon, or C, because it is 3 days long?
Oh, I think 3 days long.
The entire opera, 3 days long.
Yeah.
It's actually in Klingon. Klingon, of course, being the made-up language created by fans of the TV show Star Trek, the opera tells the story you so well know, of the first Klingon emperor, Kales the Unforgettable. All right. You still have 2 more chances. This will go well. I know it will. Because you're a soap opera star. It always ends happily, right?
Mm-hmm.
As the saying goes, it's not over until the fat lady sings. But back in 2001, a leading opera diva, Deborah Voigt, did not sing at all. Why? A, she was too fat and wouldn't fit into the black cocktail dress required for her. B, she had a terrible bout of hiccups. Or C, the theater refused to accommodate her demand for her own pony in her dressing room.
I hope she couldn't fit into the black dress.
That's right. She was too fat, even by opera standards. The director decided she wouldn't look right in a black cocktail dress he wanted for one scene. The dress stayed. She left, but she did eventually lose the weight and come back. All right. You got 1 out of 2 with 1 to go. Here, you get this one. You will, in fact, win, and all shall be well. New operas are being written all the time. Opera lovers will soon be able to see a new work based in the life of whom? A, The Presidency of Millard Fillmore, B, The Balloon Boy, or C, The Late Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh, I hope it's Anna Nicole Smith.
It is Anna Nicole Smith. Well done.
God, Anna Nicole Smith.
The stuff that happened to her wouldn't have flown in your soap opera. The opera based in her life will be premiered at the Royal Opera House in Britain.
Wow.
Carl, how did Tina do on our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. 2 correct answers, so Tina wins for Andrea Pereca.
Well done, Tina.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everybody.
Tina Sloan appeared in Guiding Light for 26 years. She's the author of the book Changing Shoes and Bookstores Now. Tina Sloan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Loved it. Bye.
Bye-bye. In just a minute, Carl reminisces about his days as the dynamite-slinging character J.J. on the 70s sitcom Good Rhymes. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. Everybody's so sad now.
I know. That barrel's getting empty.
Yeah, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Alonzo, for years, anthropologists and archaeologists have tried to figure out why, about 10,000 years ago, human beings stopped wandering around, started growing crops, and launched civilization. One Canadian scientist says he now knows the answer. They did it because they wanted what?
They wanted to, was it safer?
No, they didn't do it for safety.
Do I get a hint on
you
this?
You do. It turns out that hunter-gatherers don't have this because the kegs are too heavy to carry.
When you say kegs, I think beer. But
you're correct.
Yes,
it's beer.
Beer.
Beer. is the cause of human civilization. Making food from grains was a pain in the Neolithic butt. It's a lot of work to make something from grains as edible. However, we know from studying the modern equivalent of primitive humans, college freshmen, there's nothing they will not go through to get a beer. That is that brewing and then exchange of beer between humans became an important part of early civilized behavior. So our first leap from disorganized bands to culture was basically a kegger. This explains a lot. It explains a lot. It explains why cave paintings are so crude. That's not an ox. That's a horse drawn by a drunk guy.
Right. Yeah, you can imagine that. You know, that's where the marital disharmony began. Right then.
Really?
Yeah. Ever since you learned how to make beer and control fire, we haven't gone out once.
Tom, we've all become a little too dependent on the internet, leading us to make all kinds of amusing errors. Case in point, a group of soldiers in Nicaragua, after checking Google Maps, accidentally did what?
They invaded a Walmart.
No, they didn't invade a Walmart. Traditionally, who do you invade?
An enemy.
Yes.
A neighboring country.
Yes, they invaded.
They invaded
Costa Rica, is what they did. A Nicaraguan commander.
Well, they don't have an army. If you're going to invade a country, that's a good choice.
Well, this is what happened. A Nicaraguan commander near the border looked on Google Maps, which said that Nicaragua's border extended a couple miles farther into Costa Rica than he thought it did. Refusing to believe that his own brain was a match for the wisdom of Google, he marched his troops right into Costa Rica, causing an international incident. Fortunately, there were no casualties in this invasion. The Nicaraguans quickly fled after reading on Wikipedia that Costa Rica is known for its savage 10-foot-high soldiers who eat Nicaraguans for lunch. It's true. Wikipedia says so. Run! Alonzo, over the last couple of years, you've heard a lot of dark accusations about the federal government. Well, it turns out, at least according to the New York Times, the federal government is trying to kill us with what?
Ooh, I have no idea.
They're calling it Operation Gouda.
Cheese?
Yes! They're trying to kill us with cheese. Let me explain.
Government cheese is dangerous?
Well, all cheese is dangerous. Let me explain. Americans do not eat enough cheese. Yes, I know you're thinking we must mean some other Americans. But no, it's us. For decades, the Department of Agriculture has subsidized milk production, while at the same time encouraging people to avoid eating too much fat. The result has been a huge cheese surplus. They don't know where to put it. They tried putting it in caves. Really, they tried launching it into space with mysterious missiles off the coast of L.A.
Did they ever think of giving the Green Bay Packer fans actual cheese?
To put on their heads? That's a good word.
Right. It's a good idea. Right.
It's a head covering. It's a snack. Makes your hair lustrous. It'd be good. You could make a cheese wall with our border of Mexico. Just don't use Swiss. Kiri, you remember Congressman Joe Barton of Texas?
Who could forget him?
He apologized to BP for making them pay for cleaning up their oil spill. He once worried that if we had wind power, we'd use up all the wind. He did that. This week, though, he promised that now he'll be in the majority in the House. He'll lead the fight to defend something he holds dear. What?
Oh, let me see. Well, he's going to be like chairman of the Energy Committee,
yes.
Right?
Oh, no.
Well, he's kind of a Thomas Edison apologist.
Light bulbs!
Exactly. Incandescent light bulbs.
Oh, of course.
Barton is defending the incandescent light bulb against government regulators who are pushing the far more efficient compact fluorescents, which Barton calls, and this is what he calls them, quote, the little squiggly pigtailed ones, unquote.
Those little hippie balls.
Oh, yeah. Our understanding is that Mr. Barton doesn't like fluorescent lights because, first, their harsh light ruins his romantic dinners. And secondly, as a friend to the energy industry, he feels that fluorescents do not use enough energy. That's why his real preference for lighting is wall sconces holding lumps of burning coal.
You know, his real preference is whale oil, but
absolutely.
Well, as a Texan, isn't if we do use wind energy, isn't he going to make sure we use American wind and
exactly.
not that Mexican wind sneaking up here across the border?
No. Oh, we'll take their wind.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and about next week's show in Las Vegas, starring Carl Castle and Wayne Newton together in the same stage for one night only. Ticket information is at Ticketmaster.com or at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sam Shannon from Madison, Wisconsin.
And what do you do there in Madison?
I'm a project manager for a power supply company.
Power supply? So, I mean, I'm going to guess you supply power.
Superpowers.
Superpowers. You supply superpowers. That's cool. Can I get one?
Yes.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Sam, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to go?
Yep.
Here's your first limerick.
To update our status, we're keen. Balmoral is where one has been. Relations are stated as quite complicated. On Facebook, be friends with the...
Notice the regal British accent.
Queen.
Yes. Happy news, everybody. The Queen of England is finally on Facebook, which in England is the equivalent of everybody's mom joining Facebook simultaneously. Everybody's frantically updating their privacy settings and de-tagging pictures of themselves wasted. It's fun to be the Queen. She can play Farmville with actual farms. And she's already had 435 subject requests. We are poking you. Status, we are so wasted. Here is your next limerick.
At this Hadron colliding rig thing, the fat lady in her wig sang. We used ions of lead since those protons were dead. And now we've just had a...
Big Bang.
Yes, indeed. Exciting development at CERN in Switzerland this week. And before I go on, Carl, was that your Swiss accent that you just did? That was great.
Do they say thang in Switzerland?
I guess they do now. Anyway, scientists used the Large Hadron Collider to simulate the beginnings of the universe, creating a mini Big Bang. That's what they call it, a mini Big Bang. It's the jumbo shrimp of high-energy physics. Just call it a little bang, a mini bang. The important thing is that they don't give a stupid name to the black hole they're going to make that will destroy the universe next week. Here is your last limerick.
We carnivores clap and stomp feet at meals without veggies or wheat. The sight of raw flesh leaves us happy and fresh. We calm right down when we see...
meat.
Right! Looking at meat calms you down. That's the word from scientists at McGill University's School of Advanced Meat Watching. It's not really called that. Researchers say meat eases the mind because it reminds us of mealtimes, surrounded by friends and family. Whatever the explanation, it's clearly a good idea to replace that soothing little electric waterfall in your office with a calming meatfall.
Would that work on small children, I wonder?
Like waving, try yeah, waving like, red meat in
it's
front
like,
of them?
Yeah, it's bedtime, okay, you guys, settle down. You just got to bring out the meat tray.
Yeah. Everybody kiss your sirloin goodnight. No, I don't see that. Carl, how did Sam do in our quiz?
Three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on Sam's voicemail.
Well done. Congratulations.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Right.
Thanks for playing.
Time has come to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Kerry O'Connor and Tom Beaudet each has 3 points. Alonzo Bowden has 2.
All right, Alonzo, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, a Department of Defense spokesman finally announced that a suspicious contrail in California came from a plane, not a blank as rumored.
Missile.
Right. Although the Democrats lost the House of Representatives, blank plans to stay in Washington and run for House Minority Leader.
Nancy Pelosi.
Right. On the first episode of his new show on TBS, blank soundly beat his competition in the ratings.
Conan O'Brien.
Right. According to hikers, South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford was spotted this week actually blanking.
Hiking.
Hiking the Appalachian Trail,
hiking
no less.
Hiking the Appalachian Trail.
Collecting more than $8.9 million, Jonathan Dumel became the first Canadian to win the main event in the World Series of blank.
Poker.
Right. A nutrition professor at Kansas State University made headlines after losing weight on a diet consisting mostly of blank.
Donuts.
Close, Twinkies. It was Twinkies, the Twinkie diet. In a desperate effort to get a decent night's sleep, a South Carolina woman finally called on the cops to put an end to blank.
Her TV? No idea. I don't...
Her husband's snoring. The woman called police and her husband roused himself enough to respond, quote, "It would take a SWAT team to bring me in." And since snoring is not illegal in South Carolina, police were unable to help the woman, who then begged them to send her to jail instead. Carl, how did Alonzo do in our quiz?
5 correct answers, Peter, for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Alonzo has the lead.
All right. We have flipped a coin. Curie has elected to go second. Here you go, fill in the blank. This week, the FDA released 36 graphic images that it's considering adding to the warnings on the labels of blank.
Cigarette packs.
Right. Because of a recent bomb scare in Yemen, officials banned travelers from bringing blank on airplanes.
Toner cartridge.
Right. Alaska Senate candidate Joe Miller filed a lawsuit to try to prevent election officials from counting write-in votes for Lisa Murkowski if they are blank.
Misspelled.
Right. Vice President Joe Biden laid a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery on Thursday in honor of blank.
Veterans Day.
Right. One surprising fact from George Bush's memoir is that Vladimir Putin once bragged to him about the size of his blank.
I knew the answer. The size of his, I give up.
His dog. After being suspended by MSNBC.
It's a lamb. It's a black lamb.
It is. After being suspended by MSNBC for making contributions to Democratic candidates, blank returned to the air on Tuesday.
Keith Olbermann.
Right. Finishing in 5 hours, 40 minutes, Edison Pena, one of the 33 rescued blanks, ran this year's New York Marathon.
Chile and mine.
Yes. A new book on the life of Marilyn Monroe revealed the somewhat shocking secret to her blank.
To her beauty.
To her homemade Thanksgiving stuffing recipe. Oh. For decades, people everywhere have wondered how Marilyn Monroe stuffed her turkey. Now we know. She's the blend of 5 spices, 3 kinds of nuts, and no garlic. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points and the lead.
All right, so how many then does Tom need? Very good, Kiri. How many then does Tom need to win the game?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
Tall order.
All right. Here we go, Tom. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, a Sunni Arab lawmaker was elected to head up the parliament in blank.
Iraq.
Right. According to the Washington Post, a study by the Pentagon found little risk in repealing the military's blank policy.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right, to repay his debts, an auction of Ponzi schemer blank's personal possessions was held on Saturday.
Bernie Madoff.
Right, this week, Washington became the second state to ban energy drinks that combined caffeine and blank.
Alcohol.
Right, Renault will be allowed to proceed with plans for a Zoe brand car after a judge dismissed a lawsuit filed against it by blank.
Zoe.
Right, Zoe Renault. Nominated for 35 Academy Awards, Italian movie producer blank died at age 91.
Fellini?
No. Dino De Laurentiis. Oh, right. Google announced that for the holidays it will provide free in-flight blank on 3 airlines.
Internet.
Right, wireless internet. A man in Boston carjacked a limousine this week without realizing that it was blank.
It was the mayor's car.
That it was full of bridesmaids.
Oh, bad luck.
The carjacker smashed his way into the limousine that had 5 bridesmaids in it. Immediately, the limo became a flurry of fuchsia bouquet, flying blue satin, and screaming bridesmaids who fled the limo and took a sacred bridesmaid oath to keep the news from the bride till after the wedding. Because if there's one thing scarier than a carjacker, it's a bride who's been upstaged by her bridesmaids. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
Well, he needed at least 6 correct answers to tie, and he had 6 correct answers to tie Kerry O'Connor. So, Kerry O'Connor and Tom Beaudet are this week's co-champions.
Well done. Bravo. Alonzo, don't feel bad. That means you get to move up to second.
All right.
All right.
I'll take that.
Okay. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what souvenir President Obama will bring back from his trip around the globe. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at LumberLiquidators.com. And Progressive Insurance, sponsor of the Automotive XPRIZE, whose winners are developing super fuel-efficient cars. Details at ProgressiveAutoXPRIZE.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. And the winner of this week's Name That Crime contest on our blog is David Latta. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will Obama bring back from Asia? Alonzo Bowden.
I think from South Korea he's going to bring back a Kia presidential limousine complete with wrapping hamsters so he can get with this or he can get with that.
All right. Kerry O'Connor.
A vial of powdered antelope horn guaranteed to stiffen Democrats' spines.
And Tom Beaudet.
A bar tab for Michelle Bachmann from that $200 million night in Mumbai.
Well, if the president brings back any of those souvenirs, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Alonzo Bowden, Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Beaudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. Paris Hotel and Casino, Las Vegas. Be there. This is NPR.